You're listening to The Steve Yabsley Show. Thank you for your company on this Monday, the 11th of March. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Emma Mardlin. Hello, Emma.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for inviting me on the show today.
Thank you for coming in. Now, Emma's written a lovely new book called Out of Your Comfort Zone, Breaking Boundaries for a Life Beyond. And it is, in effect, a step-by-step guide to conquering fear and creating what she calls an unstoppable mindset. Fabulous. I think most of us need a bit of this. And we'll go into detail in a moment. But let's find out a little bit about you, first of all. Where are you from originally? Where were you born?
I was actually born in Sheffield.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to law school in Nottingham.
Oh, yes.
Went back to Sheffield for a little bit.
Right.
Then went back to live in Nottingham and actually started a different career in psychology and psychotherapy. And that's what I love and do now and have built up.
Do you support one of the Sheffield football teams, or couldn't you care less?
I really couldn't care less.
Yeah, that's good.
England is fine.
Do you know, well, are they?
Well, yeah, good point.
Okay, and you moved around a little bit as a young person, but you trained as a psychotherapist and you've got a PhD in mind-body medicine. What sort of drew you to that interest initially? How did you fall into that?
I guess from being a young child, I've always been what we might say, contrarian. It's just slightly thought differently and not gone with conventional mindsets. And as a young child, I was ill quite a lot, and I got type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
When I was only 10 years old, and I had a lot going on before that as well with a genetic condition. And I kind of always knew my own body and knew when other things were wrong, so I had a different approach to that. But when I got involved in the medical world, I could understand all the medicine, but it was I didn't like it. I didn't like the way they thought and the way you was almost typecast and labelled as a diabetic. And it's not, I'm still M, and this is still full of personality. I'm not just this diabetic,
yes,
you know, that needs to stick to rules and regulations, and you don't have a life outside of that. So when I was first told and diagnosed with diabetes, my mindset was, no problem, I'll deal with what I have to and I'm going to cure it. And that was that. I knew there'd be a way, and that was probably my intuition of just the way I am. I was a little bit different in my thinking, how I feel about things. So I guess the interest started there naturally and into more natural health. Didn't particularly feel that law was for me after going through all that and wanting to be a barrister and everything else. It just wasn't my, didn't fit with
it
my
blueprint.
It doesn't
suit everyone.
Really.
It's a relentless lifestyle as well, isn't it? I know,
yes,
it's well remunerated, but you have to devote your whole life to it, don't you?
Well, sometimes it is. I mean, you do have to catch up with all it costs to actually study it.
Yes.
And then as a barrister, you know, there's days when you don't get paid as
sure,
well. So
sure, sure. Just referring back to Sheffield, I mean, that city has produced some fabulous music over the years. Were you very aware of that as you grew up? The great bands that have come out of Sheffield?
Yeah, one particular person that I absolutely love is Jarvis Cocker.
Yes,
from Sheffield.
Of course,
he's
Paul.
Brilliant. But yes,
yeah.
But he's we've got some fantastic bands that have been produced, and people that are little known as well that are great to go and seeing gigs.
Yeah, I was talking to some Americans the other day, and they were just saying, how about the fabulous music that we produce in this country? You know, you get more decent music produced in Sheffield than you do in the whole of France. It's quite extraordinary. Now, you're a founding partner.
Or Eurovision.
Yeah, that's true. You're a founding partner of the Pinnacle Practice, which is a health and wellbeing clinic. Tell me briefly about that.
Yes, well, what we do is help anybody to meet with their true core blueprint in life. So if you have anything to do with mental health or even physical health, then we can help working with the mind to actually reverse that. So as we know in the news a lot, we have depression and anxiety is a big thing. So that's something we work with a lot of the time. And as you'll see from case studies in the book as well, I've taken people off antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs that are often just prescribed like sugar pills.
Sure.
And people don't need to be on them if they look at a different way of thinking and work through the methods. A lot of what I talk about in the book as well, because that's coming really out of your comfort zone in terms of what you can do with your health, being completely free of any limitations. So then you're free to live your life how you want to.
Sure, it's different for every individual. Some people will need medication, others they can overcome their problems simply by changing their mindset. And I know that you work with human psychology, the unconscious mind, and neurology to sort of activate positive results, don't you?
Yes, it's working with the mind to activate any positive results. So that's intangibly in terms of health, and that can be tangibly in terms of life, in terms of wealth, relationships, you name it, whatever you want in life, it's possible to get. However much you might think it's impossible, it's about making things possible for each individual as they want to go forward in life.
Well, you write for a number of journals and in the media, and you also lecture and run courses, and not just in this country, you've also worked in the United Arab Emirates, haven't you? Tell me about your work there.
Yes, that's fantastic over there. It's training the police force and the military as well. So it's about working with the mind and state control. So that's very interesting. You meet some fantastic characters as well over there, and it's a different culture as well. But I still feel very free and able to teach the way I teach over there, because I'm quite a liberal person. And first of all, that was breaking my boundaries and comfort zone, because I didn't know what to expect when I went to train over there. So I didn't know if I was going to be needing to wear the full burqa to train people, or how I would be received even as a woman.
I was going to ask that, because it is, from an outsider's point of view, a misogynistic society where women, it seems to me, are second raters in many aspects. And yet you're a woman, a strong woman, going over there and teaching men. How did they react to you? Did you get any adverse reaction at all?
They were fantastic on my first training, but as I've trained lots of different people, you do see, as you can in this country, in fact, how sometimes men can see women differently, as you said, in a second light.
Yes.
Or they will not always listen to what you say, they're more concerned with how you might look.
Sure.
But eventually, and when you are trained to train properly, you can capture the audience, and you know how to work with their mindsets and their limitations.
Sure.
Is what they really are, to actually be able to teach them and I suppose break boundaries in a different culture as well. So
yeah, it's
I do enjoy that.
Any little difference you make there might sort of fan out and help other people. What about the weather, the climate when you were there? It's flipping warm, isn't it?
Absolutely boiling. But yeah, I love that, because it takes me about a month to defrost from return when I'm over there. So I like that.
Now, you offer advice on stress management, communication, leadership, and also, rather nicely, you run a privately funded small charity division for helping individuals in severe need, don't you?
Yes, because we found that, I don't want to get too political here, but sometimes the NHS can leave people by the roadside when it comes to mental health.
Yeah. Well, it is a growing issue, isn't it? I don't know if necessarily more people have got it, it's just there's a greater acknowledgement that there is a problem and more people need help, don't they?
Yes, and some of the people that need the most help, they've gone through the channels of the NHS and they've been put on lots of medication, and as if that's the solution. However, they've approached ourselves, and as kind and decent people, you know, you have to find something, how to help people sometimes. So we set up a charitable division, so people that are severely in need, we privately fund ourselves, so it's our time and costs.
Yeah.
And we've taken people through the process that we do, and now they're off antidepressants and living a life full of abundance that they should be able to, because we've managed to utilize the way we do things, and that's through tackling the root cause and really giving people that time to listen to them and that validation that they really need.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of the times the way that GPs will give medication to someone that comes into their surgery, and in a way you can't blame them. They're under so much pressure. They got 5 minutes per person at the come, and if it's just something that helps them in the short term, at least they can move on to the next patient, can't they? I mean, they simply haven't got the time to devote to send them off somewhere else, or give them a long talk that they may really require. It's just an easy fix, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very pressurised within the NHS, especially for GPs, and that's why we need to look to something different, some sort of service that's where people don't just have to go to the GPs. They can be allocated a certain funding or something, so they can actually choose who they want to go and see and explore how they need to explore to get better, rather than just cast aside as a quick fix, like a quick sticky plaster that incidentally peels off a lot of the time.
Now, you mentioned, and you're very candid about this, that you personally have had health issues. You've overcome your own pretty tough problems. Can you just explain to someone who's quite ignorant to me about the different types of diabetes? You had type 1 diabetes, I think, didn't you?
Yes.
What are the different types and how do they affect you?
Sure. Well, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition, and you usually get that in childhood or when you're teenage, sometimes early adult life. And that's treated with insulin injections, because most of the beta cells that actually produce insulin in the body to take out sugar to metabolize glucose, as we all need to, that's not functioning properly.
If you didn't have treatment, what would happen to you?
Well, this is interesting when it comes to myself, because part of my research is actually reversing type 1 diabetes, and I'm quite along the road with that. So let's take somebody with type 1 diabetes that actually has it at face value and doesn't do the work that I do. If they don't have medication, quite simply you become very ill, hospitalised, and it wouldn't be a very nice process that you'd go through to, it would become end of life.
About type 2 diabetes then?
Type 2 diabetes is when the pancreas has slowed down, so it's not producing as much insulin as it needs to. There's a resistance.
And that can be caused by diet, can't it?
Yes, absolutely. Generally, diet and lifestyle, by eating too much sugars. But also stress is a main catalyst, because stress, if it's very chronic, then you're still increasing the body's natural blood sugar, because it's producing adrenaline. That shoots up blood sugar. So really, if you go, although people can get it by eating too much sugar, it's still a question of why are they eating too much sugar, and usually that comes down to stress as well, but stress per se can also raise sugar levels. So,
well, Emma knows an awful lot about this, because her first book is called Mind Body Diabetes Type 1 and Type 2, A Positive and Powerful Proven Solution to Stop Diabetes Once and For All, and that book is still available, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And very well received. I was looking online, I mean, you're someone who's lived through the problem yourself and you're offering a solution. So look out for that. That's Dr. Emma Mardlin and Mind Body Diabetes Type 1 and Type 2. Your new book, Out of Your Comfort Zone, is this step-by-step guide to conquering fear, creating what we call an unstoppable mindset. And we'll find out all about that book after this. podcast all the way from Liverpool, and there she goes. Stevie Absley Show, your local radio station, BBC Radio Bristol. My guest at the moment is Dr. Emma Mardlin, who's written a really interesting new book called Out of Your Comfort Zone, and it's all about breaking boundaries. And this, I suppose, is based on the work that you've done over the last few years, isn't it?
Yes, it's the work I do every day, really, even personally or professionally. Because personally, I work on reversing type 1 diabetes, so that well takes you out of your comfort zone.
Sure.
Especially when it's little understood in the terms of mind-body medicine, but also working with people in practice. It's only till you take people well out of their comfort zone to break their boundaries, so that's tangibly or intangibly, a lot of the time having to go deep inside yourself, where real change happens.
Yeah, people often don't know what they're capable of. I mean, how many times have you heard someone say, I really didn't want to do it, but when I did, I was so pleased, and it gave me such a feeling of, positivity.
Yes, definitely. That's something I call the rush effect, actually, in terms of that it's a natural fear to do a lot of things, but once you push yourself to do that, then you have the most immense rush afterwards of endorphins and feeling good about something. So, for example, I had an intense, ridiculous fear of heights growing up, but I will still go on the Oblivion at Alton Towers with the vertical drop and feel all the awful feelings of fear in the queue, but I know I'll feel exhilarated once I've done it and gone through the process. And that's something I call the rush effect, and I guess that links to one of the methods of coming out of your comfort zone, which I say is screw it, just do it. And that's just go and have a go.
Well, of course, there's that famous book, isn't there, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, which was self-help guide that was published a number of years ago. It is all about, you know, facing up to your fears. If you've got the courage just to step over the line, you'll almost always have a benefit from it, won't you?
Oh, absolutely. However, that's not always possible for people just to, you know, go and do something, because you may be that wound up or scared of something in the first place.
Well, you talk about baby steps in the book, don't you?
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Well, that's about being able to build up resilience to put yourself in the space to do the very things that scare you. So that may involve going deep inside yourself to find out what's the core fear, what's it really about that's stopping you or preventing you from doing something?
And how do you identify it? How do you identify that core reason then?
Well, the core reason, well, that comes on to the third reason of how you break out of your comfort zone, and that's taking any negative emotion, and generally any negative emotion ultimately pertains to fear. So anger or frustration, that ultimately is fear. So anything that isn't a positive emotion that helps you drive forward is a negative blockage of energy, and that's the fear. So getting to the root of that, you would look at, when is the very first time you even felt fear, or how do you know that you're scared of something? And that starts taking you back to the root. But even when you do that unconsciously, a person isn't forced to actually know what their root fear is. So that's where somebody like myself would help them or pinpoint it, and also help to talk to their unconscious mind, the part of the mind that we're not actually aware of, but does 90% of the work in running the body. Actually being able to uncover what may be in there. So a fear may even come from something like regressing back, even pre-birth or during gestation, because if you think about it, when you're in gestation, if say your mother is very nervous of something, you would feel, as you're being carried by her, the actual nerves transmitting through. That's something that involves epigenetics, which is a whole different field and something else.
And you give advice though on sort of getting rid of that block.
Yeah, absolutely. There's different especially in the book, we talk about different techniques and methods of how to do that. And then when you're sat in front of me, you'll definitely go through that process to make sure we unearth absolutely everything, to rip out the roots. So that's essentially an emotional cleansing, because as I said, any form of negative emotion ultimately pertains to a fear, and that's what blocks our energy from attracting all the positive energy that we need to go forward and achieve anything in life.
Indeed, one of the interesting points that you make in the book is that there are only two basic emotions, which are love and fear, and everything else sort of cascades down from those two things, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So everything positive, like joy, laughter, any positive emotions you can think of, they are actually derived from love. And as I said, anything negative, so anger, frustration, hurt, guilt, that all ultimately pertains to fear. So essentially and metaphysically, there are just two main emotions in the world. That's love and that's fear.
You talk about anxiety-reducing foods. Can you give me a hint of what they may be?
Yes, yes. These are, as I say and will always maintain, any real getting rid of anxiety involves tackling the root cause, but there are so many things on the surface to help. So a lot of the time when people are, say, nervous about something, they won't eat anything. But actually, that's what spikes. Your body then doesn't know when it's next getting fed. So it panics, releases a lot of adrenaline, and then it boosts up your blood sugar. Then all of a sudden your blood sugar crashes and you start feeling even more nervous and anxious. That's a symptom of low blood sugar level. So it's always important, first of all, to eat something even when you're nervous. But something simple like porridge induces serotonin, which is a happy chemical. And then we've got foods with magnesium in them. So spinach and salmon are fantastic because they help balance the body's effects of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. And then even having black tea that contains a natural substance, called L-theanine. And that actually negates the tea's effects of caffeine, because caffeine causes anxiety. And it's also been scientifically researched to produce a calming but alert effect.
Yeah, it's not just food, so you look at a variety of anxiety sort of busting techniques, you call them, don't you?
Yes.
And also ways of building resilience, packed with different information. And what you're aiming for is this key marker, which you call the 00 personality. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, well, in the book there's the what I call the zone test, and that's a series of introspective questions, very specific, so it makes you go within yourself, and they are consistent with certain patterns of thinking and comfort zone levels. So that gives you a particular score, and the aim is something called a zone zero. So that's a particular zone where you've actually got no boundaries and almost no comfort zone. So that's not to say you never feel fear, it's to say you never fear fear, because you know in your heart of heart that there's always a way that you can deal with it and that you're happy to go out and push boundaries.
Now, you've helped hundreds of people over the years with the work that you've done. It must be lovely when people come to you and they've got all manner of anxiety problems. Many of them they've had for years and years, and you can slowly work with them and it changes their life. That must be really satisfying.
Really satisfying. That's why I love my job. And people say, you have not had a holiday for ages. But I don't mind, because I do love the work I do. So my work is my life, essentially. And well, I do enjoy that.
Well, the new book is called Out of Your Comfort Zone. It's published by Findhorn Press. And people can find out more details about Emma at her own website, which is www.dr-m-e-m. Everyone calls you M, don't they?
Yes.
.co.uk. But actually, Emma, if they just put Emma Mardlin into Google, all the details will pop up. Are you pleased with the book?
Yes, I am pleased with the book. All books take a lot of work, and I think it's easy to pick a book up off the shelf and just flick through it without actually realising what goes into it. But I'll be very pleased with the book when I hear lots of people telling me how it's actually helped them to get rid of their fears and live a life beyond limits. That's the real aim.
Well, it's only just been published. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of positive feedback. Thank you so much for coming in today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
There you go. That is Dr. Emma Mardlin, and that new book of hers, Out of Your Comfort Zone, all about breaking boundaries for a life beyond and getting a sort of unstoppable mindset for moving forward, is just published by Findhorn Press. And you can find out more details about Emma at her website, which is www.dr-mem.co.uk.
From Weston Supermare to Bath, Thornbury to the Mendips. BBC Radio Bristol.